This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Fort Myers Beach, Florida, experiences Hurricane Idalia, winds and rough surf. It's projected to make landfall along Florida's Big Bend region early tomorrow. Governor Ron DeSantis.
You really got to go back to the late 1800s to find a storm of this magnitude that will enter where this one looks like it's going to enter.
KTVT TV's Jason Allen in Crystal River.
Southwest Florida began to feel the impact of the storm from the Keys up through the Fort Myers Beach area and beyond. Crews at the U.S. Coast Guard Station in Clearwater prepared for search and rescue missions. As it tracks toward Florida, Idalia has been gaining strength, fueled by some of the hottest waters on Earth in the Gulf of Mexico, which scientists attribute to climate change.
Louisiana's governor gets a firsthand look at wildfire-ravaged areas of his state. WWL's Ian Ozan.
Governor John Bel Edwards flew over the Tiger Island fire in Beauregard Parish on Tuesday. That fire has already burned 32,000 acres, making it the largest wildfire in the state's history. Edwards warned that recent rainfall in the area isn't enough to stop the fire spread.
It's going to very quickly evaporate. It's going to be gone. And then the conditions for fire are right back to where they were.
Ian Ozan for CBS News, New Orleans.
Meantime, in Maui, crews have searched 100% of the Lahaina disaster area on land, but they are still scouring the waters. The number two Republican in the House, Representative Steve Scalise, makes a medical announcement. CBS's Allison Keyes.
House Majority Leader Scalise says he has already started treatment for multiple myeloma, which he says is a very treatable form of cancer.
Scalise says he will work while undergoing treatment. X, formerly known as Twitter, is reversing a years-long decision to ban political advertising just as the 2024 presidential race heats up. CBS News technology contributor Ian Scher.
This decision is part of a broader move by a lot of different internet companies lately to reduce the amount of moderation they are doing on their platforms.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has reached a multi-billion dollar settlement with what it calls a credit repair conglomerate. CBS's Christopher Cruz.
The agency says what it describes as the largest credit repair brands in America, including Lexington Law and CreditRepair.com, engaged in a, quote, years-long scheme to illegally harvest billions in fees.
A new Titanic expedition by a Georgia-based firm is planned, but the U.S. is fighting it in court. The government says it has nothing to do with the fatal implosion of the Titan submersible in June. Rather, it involves a pact with Great Britain to treat the wreck as a memorial to those who died and to prevent entry into its hull. This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes. Good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you.
And you could be me.
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Innovative.
Innovative?
Innovative. Whatever. You can say it both ways. A friend wouldn't make fun of somebody like for knowing a word. See, this is what I'm talking about, people. Kristen Bride does not believe in friendship. I don't allow them to compliment me back because I can't take a compliment.
I like your beard.
Shut up. I'm leaving right now.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to Tuesday's show, August 29th. And when there's a billing error, when someone screws up in the accounting office, who's on the hook? Is it the fact that the company or the school, or maybe the IRS has screwed up? Or if you, the person who did not screw up but still owes money, who's responsible for the error? Not the A-I-R, the E-R-R-O-R. Did I say error?
Error.
That's like rural. So I have a hard time saying rural sometimes.
I live in the rural area.
Greg Bach, before I go deeper into the story that this question is associated with, on its surface, what say you?
It's never my fault.
It's never your fault. No, I don't. It's not about fault, but it's like you owe X amount of money.
Yes.
But when you're billed originally, they bill you for a certain amount, and then they come back later and say, oh, sorry, we screwed up. We didn't bill you for enough. You owe us X amount of money.
I mean, at the end of the day, like, I guess maybe I'm old enough to know that, one, if I've spent the money and they explain themselves, I'm like, all right, I mean, yeah, I'll pay you. I'm going to end up paying you because that's just what's going to happen. But also, I'm gonna be like, grrr, you know, and ask for, like, well, can you help me out here? Can you, I don't know. Like, I'm going to end up paying.
You're going to, well, I mean, you probably have to, right? Because it goes to collections. There's something that happens. Yeah. But I bring this up because locally, at least locally in Wisconsin, UW Oshkosh billing error leads to nearly an $8,000 surprise for recent graduates. And there's a small group of University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. This was for their executive MBA program. They're claiming they shouldn't have to repay more than $55,000 in total charges they received months after graduation due to a campus billing error. The university says the former students should have known they were undercharged and it's obligated to collect. And so my question, 844-967-2789, is, and not just in this situation, but this happens in salary sometimes. This happens, you know, I got a refund. I think I got $400 back from the IRS because they had made some mistake, or maybe I had made a mistake. But, you know, like sometimes accounting errors happen. And I wonder who you think is responsible. 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. Like, because I had, this wasn't my, this was back when I was managing a team, and we were in a scenario where there was a guy on my team. I had not hired him. He was one of the guys I inherited. And he wasn't very good at his job.
Ted, you're not good at your job.
He was also he was one of those, you know, the great combo of you're not necessarily, because it's a sales job, right? But the team I managed when I was working in tech, yeah, was the team that kind of sits between marketing and sales. So they're following up on leads that come in. They're outbounding, cold calling, cold emailing, trying to set meetings up for account executives. So he was not very good at like hitting his meeting number, basically. But he was also like precocious and entitled. And so it was a really bad combo in general.
Oh, I love that.
But he, before I had been hired, there was an accounting error where he was getting overpaid and he didn't say anything. And I don't know, I forgot how much he was being overpaid, but it was enough that, and over a long enough period of time, that he had like owed the company, let's say, $4,000.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting let go because he was precocious, entitled, and not very good at his job. And there was kind of this question of, How does the company, because he was basically on a payment, like a payback plan to the company where there was like certain amounts, even though, again, the companies like made the billionaire and was overpaying him. But then to try to make it right, since he wasn't making enough to just pay back $4,000 in one go, he is like $400 per paycheck or something. But he would still had like half of it left when he let go. And I think the company just ate it.
Yeah.
Cause there was like, we don't know how else to like, how, you know, and I don't know the legal ramifications for that, but it happens, right? It happens in with salary. It happens apparently with tuition. And is it ever right that like, if your accounting team screws up, you got to eat it?
I mean, when it comes to school, the question I have is, the university comes and says, well, they should have known. What do you mean? You think a 22-year-old is looking at their loan statement going, well,
they're graduate students, so they're not 22-year-olds. They're somewhere 22 to 40, right? Or yeah. I mean, people, executive MBA programs are all ages.
I guess to me, it's like you're expecting them to be financial wizards to be able to look at the paperwork and say, oh, this doesn't make sense. I should be paying more, especially on a loan spread over how many years. That's going to be not a lot of money. You know, like it's going to be the difference of not a lot of money. So they're not going to, I just don't understand how you can expect these individuals to see it. And then someone go, I'm sorry, I'm not paying you enough.
Well, and especially because you think about it, I was having this conversation with one of our colleagues who lives in Madison, as far as like, I think like our insurance. And so since we're spread all over the state, with our civic media health insurance and like different rates and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And because it's just taken out of your paycheck, you know, what I actually take home versus, you know, 401k, health insurance, taxes. It's like, I don't know. Like, yeah. I think I a lot of times, at least I'm probably guilty of like just trusting the numbers.
Yeah.
Versus I'm not someone who leaves. I'm learning now just to even like check the receipt at a restaurant before we leave to make sure we didn't get charged for something. Mike is very good at that, but I am not. So it's like, I'm certainly a trust the numbers person. And if there was an accounting error, I would not be the one to catch shit.
Are you the type, or you or Mike the type, if say like you go out and get like, you each get two drinks and they forget to charge for one, you're like, you forgot to charge us? Or do you say, no, this is for us?
Well, again,
we win.
I'm not the one who's checking the receipt.
I'm saying if you and Mike go out and he checks the receipt, do either one of you say anything?
He might. He's a pretty fair, because he's like a really good tipper.
Yeah.
And so he might actually, but he'll also say, you charge us for this. Like, we weren't supposed to be charged for this.
Oh, that's not even a question.
Yeah.
You charged me for fries and I didn't order fries. No.
He was very adamant. Granted, he'd also, we had done, when I was, it was early on our pregnancy, we had gone to a very nice restaurant and he got the wine pairing.
Ooh.
I obviously did not because I couldn't enjoy it. I got like one glass of wine. And, but they charged us for two wine pairings. And by the end, he was like convinced they had done that to like swindle us. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it was just a mistake.
Falling down this conspiratorial rabbit hole. Just, hey, you know what's, you know what else? You know what's, this place is being run by lizard people. And their kitchen's in the Hollow Earth. Ah!
But I am interested in this because I kind of, You know, and the truth is, in this specific instance with UW Oshkosh, UW Oshkosh is also broke, so like they need the money back. And but basically, a little bit more detail and color for this situation. Stuart Cusick and seven other others graduated from UW Oshkosh's Executive Master of Business Administration in January. They graduated in January. On June 1st, they started to receive letters saying that they were undercharged during their final term and owed the university $7,903. Stewart said that he and six graduates in his cohort were told the same thing. And this is the quote. "We're not students anymore," he said. "I paid for this with student loan money. I'm not a student. I can't get a student loan for this."
Yeah.
And which is true. But and he also made the point. He's like, "I went here to study business. This is not how a business would act if they've already sent us like the," because not only that, but before graduating, he said that his online accounts showed that he had a negative credit balance of $3,700. And so he shared the emails from a campus financial aid director stating he had a zero balance. So like everything showed that he should be fine. Mm-hmm. And so when you start to budget, you're obviously not budgeting for another like $8,000 to be able to pay back. If yeah. Because again, you trust the system. You're like, I trust what you're telling me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I guess the thing, the problem with this whole discussion, it's so nuanced that, yeah, you're right. There are layers of responsibility that were broken here, and people didn't do their job correctly, and the students shouldn't be punished for the fact that the people charging the money didn't do it correctly. But let's face it, they're gonna end up paying one way or the other, one way or the other. I mean, that's just how it's going to be. They're not going to forgive. I mean, that's a lot of money to forgive.
Especially times seven or eight.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, you're talking a lot of money. And
well, and also, should it matter at all that if you just finish an executive MBA program, executive MBA programs, you likely already have a job because most of those are part-time, if I'm correct,
yeah,
part-time programs for people who are already in the workforce. Versus, like, you're taking 2 years off and doing, like, a grad program on campus, like, that kind of MBA program. So, like, guys should have a job. And they did offer an option for a six-month repayment plan. Otherwise, they could pay the whole thing by July 10th.
Well, the thing is though, it's, you say, like, all right, you're going to give me a six-month. Say this. When I'm done paying my school loans off, then I'll pay you off. Because what you're doing now is you, for 6 months, are charging me a double school loan.
Probably even more
and just because you have a MBA doesn't mean you can't afford that either.
That's true. All right. Well, we would love to hear your opinion either on this specific instance or in general. When there is a billionaire, like if you got overpaid by your company, are you responsible for paying back that money or is that their fault? 844-967-2789. That's 844-96-PARTY. Let us know your thoughts. Give us a text. Give us a call. And then later on at the bottom of the hour, it's Tuesday at 10:30. So we're going to recombobulate with Dan Schaefer. Stick around.
Yeah, baby.
This is Ask Coast, Wisconsin.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wisconsin Decides 2024. The road to the White House begins here. And Civic Media delivered with all-day coverage of the first Republican presidential primary debate.
The only network with every show live from Milwaukee.
The Republicans are on the wrong side of policy, on the wrong side of the people.
Wrong side of history.
Conversation you won't find anywhere else.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. 49 overnight, under clear skies, north winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Sunny skies and calm again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 70. Clear skies tomorrow night. Lows level off around 49. Clear skies Thursday with daytime highs approaching 74. 82 Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 59 degrees.
Your home of the Earl Ingram Show. Weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw. 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open. 844-967-2789. Going right to the lines. Gene of Eau Claire, my friend. You're first. Thanks for calling, Gene. What's in your mind today?
For your great work today, Matt, as usual. You know, I had called Mr. Johnson on the telephone. I don't even like to call him Senator Johnson anymore because he definitely is not my senator, and he's a criminal, in my personal biased opinion. And I asked him to please resign because we're getting sick of all the lies and the conspiracies and obstructions of justice and aiding and abetting. And you know, Matt, we have open meetings laws in the state of Wisconsin. You know, I think when you're going to have a meeting, especially when you're going to put together some fake electors or real electors, people know when that's going to happen. I mean, that's even as shady as it is, too. But the thing that I see is all of the stuff going on in the Congress really makes me upset watching this. You know, isn't it like interference in criminal prosecution, you know, and obstruction of justice? That'd be about 90 counts for Jim Jordan, wouldn't it, for all the BS they're doing in there and all of the political stuff that they're doing? I mean, I think we should start keeping notes and tracks of all the times that they're spreading rumors, trying to obstruct what's going on when the crime of the century has been aimed at us, the people, and our democracy. So I just had to throw that one at you, Matt. This is unbelievable. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's right. Before I go to the next caller, I just want to back up what Gene just said and tell you something else. If anybody out there in the Justice Department thinks that by laying off the fake electors, they'll be grateful, they'll breathe a sigh of relief, next time you run, they'll be nice to you, I want to disabuse you of that. Ron Johnson right now is saying he himself shouldn't be prosecuted. He's coming out saying the fake electors shouldn't be prosecuted and nobody who helped them should be. Who might that be? Well, that might be the guy that had the fake electors in his own pocket and try to get him to Mike Pence. And so they will immediately, the chutzpah, no, the boldness, they immediately do this. We cannot leave Fannie Willis and Jack Smith and I think it was Dana Nessel over in Michigan exposed. We have got to get prosecuting here in Wisconsin. They were fake electors. They didn't have any statement in the thing they submitted saying this is conditional if this and that. The Wisconsin Supreme Court, 4-3, had already said Biden's going to be certified. What are we waiting for? Go to the lines. Bob of Madison, my friend. Thank you for calling. What's in your mind today, Bob?
Well, I'm worried about these guys who would rather use their AR-15 than make a 988 call because they're about to commit suicide, because that's what they do. It's like Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid final scene. You know, they're trying to go out in a blaze of glory or something, but it's the mental illness and the suicide intentionality that lies behind it. I think we need to remember all our friends and neighbors. If they show a sign of trouble, tell them about Tammy Baldwin's great idea, the 988 mental health sign. That's maybe saving a mass shooting or two, and that would be great.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Bob. That's a good call. And right as we're speaking, an hour before you just went on the air, they're hunting down a guy at the University of North Carolina, the campus. That's about 750 acres. It's 3/4 of a kilometer across, and this character's on the loose. And they had the kids running out of class with their hands up and all this. You know, this has got to stop. This has got to stop. And obviously having a 988 number to call is great. A red flag law. There was a guy in Waukesha. There was a guy in Waukesha, I remember, who was mentally ill. And his father went down to the police and said, and this was about a year or two ago, and said, you got to do something. My son's mentally ill. He has a gun. And they said, well, nothing we can do. You know what he did? He drove down to Greene County, Monroe, and then he went over to Darlington in Lafayette County, and he went into a house. Door was open. Sat there. A couple came back, and I think maybe with one of their brothers or sisters, and he murdered all three. He didn't know them. He went into the house by accident. He was crazy. That can't be permitted to happen. And the Republican Party has opposed red flag laws. They will oppose any call-in number. They are simply milking that issue, and they're misrepresenting it to people. There are a lot of hunters in the Democratic Party. There are actually more guns in union halls than in country clubs. And there are also more combat medals in union halls than country clubs. Guys know how to shoot, but they don't want to go around shooting innocent people and shooting strangers, you see? That's got to be done. Excellent, excellent call. Appreciate it very, very much. Well, here's the deal. Trump and the others are going to be arraigned on September 6th in Georgia. That is the Fannie Willis case. That is the Fannie Willis case. This is great. September 6th, next week, they're going to be arraigned. The first one's going to come in at 9:30. 15-minute intervals, the last one at 3 p.m. Trump's going to be a busy guy, be a very, very busy guy. What he's going to be is he's going to be going to trial on March 4 on the Washington, D.C. case in Washington, D.C. And then this September 6, next week, he's going to be going in, and he's going to be arraigned. What's an arraignment? He goes in, and they say, Mr. Trump, have you read the charges against you? If he says no, they'll read them. It'll take a long time. He'll say, yeah, I've read them. The lawyer will say, yeah, he's read them. How do you plead, Mr. Trump? He can plead guilty, not guilty, or keep silent. If you keep silent, it's not contesting it, but they usually enter a not guilty plea for him anyway. They'll probably say not guilty. Out he goes. This guy's running for president. Give me a break. I'm going to a break. I see you on the lines. Do not hang up. I'll get back to you right after the break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Florida's West Coast is bracing for a potentially catastrophic hit from Hurricane Idalia. Emergency Management Director Kevin Guthrie says those north of Fort Myers into the central Gulf Coast.
You need to drop what you're doing. You need to go to your room, pack up, pack your things, and get to safety.
CBS's Omar Villafranca is in Crystal River.
This is the proverbial calm before the storm. People have already gone to the grocery store. They've gassed up. And a lot of people say they've made their preparations on what they think is going to happen, and they're ready for it. At this point, we're just waiting for the storm to happen.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's reached a multi-billion dollar settlement with a credit repair conglomerate for collecting excessive fees for years.
If the settlement is approved, the companies would be fined $2.7 billion and would be banned from telemarketing credit repair services for 10 years.
CBS News Brief. I'm Stacy Lynn.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes, don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us. Or on our website.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Kurt of Madison, my friend, thanks for calling. Kurt, what's in your mind today?
I was listening to Tom Hartman, and he had Dina Obadala on, and I just sent you an email with the information. I would hope maybe you could post it on your business website. Dean put together a pre-written document to send to the Secretary of State to have Trump removed from the ballot based on the amendment. And I know I'm already sharing this with as many people as I know. I agree with them. This needs to be done and push it into trial, into the court. Because I just don't see many options with the way Trump is being handled right now.
That's an excellent, excellent point. I'll look at your email and please continue to send it around. Let me give everybody a little context. The 14th Amendment, paragraph 3. there is a provision. It was passed after the Civil War. It says that anybody who took an oath of office to the United States, but then, and I mean an elected official, state or federal, and then turned around and was guilty of insurrection or rebellion or aiding insurrection or rebellion or aiding the enemies of the United States, may not hold any public office again, any office of trust. And obviously, some the Republicans say, well, that was only the Civil War. No, it wasn't the Civil War. I should say it's not only the Civil War. Andrew Johnson, remember Lincoln's vice president, was a Southerner. I think he's from Tennessee. And he was secretly pro-slavery. He maybe said he wasn't, but basically he was pro-South. And in those days, Congress would adjourn and not come back for 7 months. And they couldn't just come back on their own. They had to be called back by the president, or then they came back 7 months later if he didn't call them. Immediately, they asked Johnson to call them back because they were afraid. Remember, the Congress were abolitionists. They were Republicans, but they were abolitionists. In other words, in those days, the Democrats were the bad guys. The Republicans were the good guys. And they knew that Johnson would be up to some mischief. So what they did was, when they did get back, he tried to reinstate the Southerners in government and to slow everything down on Reconstruction. When they got in, they passed the 14th Amendment over his objection. And the 14th Amendment, they put in deliberately that nobody who had taken an oath of office could serve again if he'd been guilty of rebellion or insurrection. And what happened was some of these states had already elected Confederates who were in rebellion but had taken an oath of office before. So that put an end to that. The other thing is it's self-executing. It doesn't say a court has to decide it. Why is that? Because if there is an insurrection or a rebellion and they manage to get in and get to the federal courts like they have here, for instance, they have Clarence Thomas in their pocket. They have Alito in their pocket. They have Gorsuch in their pocket. Those people could very well say, no, you can't do it for whatever reason. Well, I'll tell you what, it's self-executing. The Secretary of State in each state is the one that decides whether the name goes on the ballot. And what Curtis Madison is saying is that there's a letter going that we can send to the Secretaries of State, and I strongly recommend it go to Sarah Godlewski here, who's a very good person, and say, Sarah, don't certify him onto the ballot. Don't put him on the Wisconsin ballot for the election next April. What will that do? If he's not on the ballot, he's not going to get any delegates from Wisconsin, because we have a system here that each party can decide who gets their nomination or their so forth, but based on the election here in the state. In Wisconsin, it's winner take all for the Republicans. If Trump gets 38% of the vote, DeSantis gets 36%, and there's nits and lice going all the way down the rest of the eight or nine dwarves, Trump gets all the delegates from Wisconsin in the Republican convention. If he's not on there, he gets none of them. And hopefully this would happen in Michigan, this would happen in Georgia, Pennsylvania, in the swing states. Now, they will sue. That's okay. It's a badge of honor. Sarah Godlewski, it's a badge of honor. They'll sue. Yes, then it goes on up through the court system. And yes, then Clarence Thomas and the other clowns in the Supreme Court who take money on the side and who are beyond the reach of the law may do whatever. But something's got to be done. And then I wouldn't obey whatever they said. The hell with them. This Supreme Court is crooked. They stripped us of our rights. 5-4, Citizens United, Clarence Thomas casting the deciding vote. They said that basically anything goes on money. After 100 years of statutes, Congresses, and Supreme Courts going the other way, 100 years. In Shelby County, this was right after the Senate had extended the Voting Rights Act till 2031, 95 to nothing. Supreme Court said 5-4 with Clarence Thomas in the majority. Senate's dumb. They don't know what they're doing. We're the Supreme Court. we're going to get rid of a lot of the Voting Rights Act. In Dobbs v. Mississippi, 5-4. 5-4. They said, we're going to repeal Roe v. Wade. The states can do whatever they want. So now, at least in Texas and Oklahoma and other states, a mother whose life is threatened can't get care. Doctor says, can you afford to go to California or Illinois? She says, no, you know, I don't know, have a yard sale, do a GoFundMe. What the hell is going on here? My life's at stake, she says. And the Declaration of Independence says, I have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Doctor says, well, the Declaration of Independence isn't part of the Constitution. And that's true except for one thing. When Abraham Lincoln said that the Declaration of Independence says life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that applies to enslaved people and black people too, the Southerners said it's not part of the Constitution. The Constitution approves of slavery. The Constitution has slaves counted as 3/5 of a human being. George Washington owned slaves. James Madison owned slaves. So what are you doing, Lincoln? And Lincoln says, well, I've decided it's part of the Constitution, and it overrides the Constitution on slavery. And they go, are you a constitutional scholar? Did you go to school? He goes, no, I worked on the farm, and I split wood, and I read books at night. They laughed at him. They go, well, then you're dumb, and you don't know what you're talking about. He says, what's your basis? He says, my basis is 1,000,000 bayonets and 10,000 cannons. That's my basis. Now, we don't want 1861 all over again. But who is the Supreme Court? 5-4, when Clarence Thomas has been on the take for 20 years, and a couple of the others have been on the take, too, and Clarence Thomas's wife's been on the take, how do we sit by and let that court, a corrupt court, say, look, we can overturn anything the president or Congress does, but they can't overturn anything we do? And you go, okay, we're in the Constitution to say that. Well, technically it doesn't say that, but it's been going on for like 200 years, so we got to get along with the program. This is a constitutional crisis. So if Trump, if Sarah Godlewski and the other secretaries of state say we're not going to put him on the ballot, then the Republicans go to their convention, which is in Milwaukee in July, and Trump's not going to have any delegates from Wisconsin, I hope Michigan, Pennsylvania, and so on. Maybe another candidate has a shot. Then let's say that they certify to Sarah Godlewski, well, we're picking Trump anyway, okay? Sarah Godlewski says, well, he took an oath of office to the United States, and he violated it by the insurrection. I'm not putting him on the general election ballot. Then they'll go up to the Supreme Court. Clarence Thomas and Alito and the rest will probably go his way. And then we have a decision to make. All that I'm getting at, you've got to understand the details of the constitutional crisis we're in. What I am getting at is let's do everything we can at this point to stand up for our Constitution, because the Supreme Court's not standing up for it, Trump's not standing up for it, and the Republican Party's not standing up for it. Bill of Oconomowoc, my friend, thanks for what's in your mind today, Bill.
Well, I actually heard you talking about what I called in for. I didn't listen to the show, so I beg your pardon if I'm being redundant. But you were talking about the Constitution, and specifically the 14th Amendment, Section 3, states that if you participate or aid and abet a domestic terrorist attack on the United States, you are no longer eligible for public office. And if you pair that with the office, oath of office they took, where they said they were going to defend the U.S. from domestic terrorism, they broke their oath. So right. If we go to court and charge them with that, that means all these clowns, Jordan, Ron Johnson, all of them, should be given a choice. Now, I'm asking your opinion, of resign or face prosecution. And if they resign, they can never participate in politics anymore. There's no ifs, ands, or buts on any of this. The law is clear. It's in the Constitution. What am I missing, Matt, or what is going to circumvent that part of the Constitution we believe in as Americans.
Yeah, no, good call. We had been talking about that a little bit. That's a great cherry on the sundae. Let me tell you two things. One is we have an even more immediate remedy against Ron Johnson. He aided and abetted the fake electors and people that did that in Georgia, Michigan, and Washington, D.C. nationwide are being prosecuted. So let's have Josh Call prosecute him in this state. Number two, you haven't missed anything. The point I was making, if it goes up, Clarence Thomas, Alito, and the rest have been taking money. I know what they're going to do. They're going to try to go with Trump, and then we talk some more about what to do in terms of that. Bill, thanks for the call. Always a terrific call from you. Wisco Paul, my friend, you're next. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Wisco Paul?
Good afternoon, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to mention, by the way, that was a great call, Bill, and your whole topic today is very educational for me, and I appreciate it. The fake electors in this state, they need to be prosecuted because they've set a template on how to overturn an election, and they need to be an example made here, Matt. Absolutely, positively, what Georgia's done, Michigan's done, is the right thing to do. And I'm sorry, you can't worry about your current elected position. It's more important to do the right thing. And Johnson on down, Fitzgerald, they all need to be held accountable for this because you're never going to change the mega's minds. But you're looking at the future here on what can and can't happen. And if you let this slide, I'm afraid you're on a slippery slope. And thanks again for your great callers. Bye.
Thank you. Well, you're one of them, Paul. Thank you for calling. Let me just say this. I couldn't agree with you more. And with regard to the reason for not prosecuting, remember Fighting Bob La Follette. Fighting Bob La Follette took on all of the big interests in the late 19th, early 20th century. And everybody said, you're crazy. You're going to lose. You're going to lose. The funny thing is, when you do the right thing, you also win frequently. You win frequently. I think that if Josh prosecutes these people, he's going to take heat like Fannie Willis is and all that. But it's a Fighting Bob La Follette moment. And I think paradoxically, you help yourself politically. That's not the reason you do it. You do it because it's the right thing to do, the moral thing to do. If you play it safe, how many football games have you ever seen where some team has a lead going into the fourth quarter and they sit on it, they play it safe, and they end up losing? They end up losing. You got to go full bore. You got to go full bore. Josh is a good man, and I think that, you know, he wants to run for higher office, and God bless him, he's a good man. However, you don't do that by playing it safe. You have got to do the right moral thing, and that is prosecuting the fake electors, like Fannie Willis, like the AG in Michigan, and like Jack Smith. Going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
The Joint Finance Committee, again in the middle of the night, took that out and said, well, hey, you have all this money coming from the federal government. Why don't you use that to create this program? Well, guess what? We proved it worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. There actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago, and that's going to stop. Just Monday, we lost two.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Lows dip down to about 49 overnight under partly cloudy skies. Northerly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. High of 70. Tomorrow, sunny skies. Clear skies and quiet again tomorrow night. Lows level off around 49. Ample sunshine expected Thursday with a high of 74. 82 Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 59 degrees.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Your home for the Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Devil's Advocates. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Let me give you another reason why the fake electors have got to be charged now, including Ron Johnson. In the paper, the last couple of days, Ron Johnson has come out. He has the guts to come out and call for Janet Protasiewicz on the Supreme Court to step down from any case involving gerrymander. Now, that is boldness, that is chutzpah, that is guts. This is a guy, the longer you don't interfere with whatever he did with the fake electors, he is not going to like you. He's not going to support you. He's not going to go easy on you. He has the effrontery to come right out and say Janet Protasiewicz should step down. Now, let me tell you something. She won 55-45. Actually, I think it was almost 11 points, like 55.5 to 44.5, something like that. Took a lot of areas of the state. People want her. During the campaign, this fellow Kelly flat out said, I've looked at the maps, they're fine. I wouldn't do anything to change them. Janet Protasiewicz says, I've looked at the maps. I think they're rigged, but I will pay attention to any briefs that are filed, any complaints that's filed, and I will make an independent decision. I just want you to know my values. Ron Johnson did not criticize Kelly for saying the maps should be kept the way they were. Rebecca Grassl Bradley, remember there are two Bradleys on the Supreme Court. They're not related. Ann Walsh Bradley is the Democrat, but she's sort of an independent. She's very, very good. She calls them like she sees them. But then there is Rebecca Grassl Bradley, who voted not to certify Joe Biden to help the Republican Party. Ann Walsh Bradley didn't vote to help the Democratic Party, but Rebecca Grassl Bradley voted to help the Republican Party unconstitutionally. And fortunately, by a 4-3 vote, because in those days there was a third Republican on the court, and Brian Hagedorn, who's also Republican, stood tall, read the Constitution, said, I'm going to vote to certify the candidate who won the election. And so Joe Biden got certified. Otherwise, it would have gone to the legislature, conceivably. Pence, they would have gotten one vote. Wisconsin would have had to send its electors. They wouldn't have been fake electors. They would have been real electors then to Trump. That's how close we came. Now, Johnson is not calling for Rebecca Grassl Bradley to step down from the case. She's already said what she'd do. He hasn't said that Kelly was wrong, and if Kelly had gotten on, he should step down. He attacks Janet Protasiewicz. Now, Janet is not going to step down. She's a very strong judge. She's not going to get pushed around, and she's going to stay on the decision, as she should. But the larger point I want to make is this. The longer you hold off not prosecuting the fake electors and the people who conspired with them to set up the fake elector scheme, the longer you do that, you do not harvest gratitude. You do not harvest warm, fuzzy feelings. You do not harness support. You do not harness a wink, wink, well, we'll support you next time when you run for office. They feel contempt. They feel contempt. They immediately say things like this. Give you another example. Kevin McCarthy. Now, this is a guy that has probably the least character of anybody in the Congress. This guy doesn't care what he does, doesn't care what he says, if it gives him the speaker's gavel. He went, what, 15 ballots and he promised the moon? Well, let me tell you something. He just said over the weekend he is likely to start impeachment proceedings against Joe Biden in September. Joe Biden. Joe Biden, who strengthened NATO, who put our alliance in the Pacific on stronger ground to stand up to China, who passed the CHIPS Act, hardcore infrastructure, soft infrastructure. Joe Biden. And why? Well, Hunter Biden. They don't like Hunter Biden, and so they want to sniff around, and they want to see more about Hunter Biden, so they'll use Joe Biden on an impeachment. But their sneakiness is catching up to them. Why do I say that? Because several moderate Republicans, not because they have a sense of morality, not because they have a sense of common decency, but because they are trembling if they vote to impeach Joe Biden to take the heat off of Donald Trump and his 91 felony charges. There are six of them in New York. There are about four of them in California. In this state, you have people like Gallagher and Stile, who may say they're moderates. I don't think they are. At some point, if you are a Republican in a district that is not entirely in Alabama or Texas or Oklahoma, and you vote to, for the hell of it, impeach the president who's doing as good a job as Joe Biden, you're going to lose. I can tell you in New York and California, you're going to lose. And then McCarthy is going to lose his majority, and he won't be speaker. But if he doesn't say this, he's going to lose Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and the rest of them. So here's the sneaky thing they came up. He used Matt Gaetz, Trafficker Gaetz, like the guy whose wingman turned on him, and somehow he didn't get indicted down in Florida. Matt Gaetz says, well, they said, you don't have 218 votes, and he doesn't. They're afraid. Takes 218 votes. They have 223 votes in the Republican caucus, but they can't get 218 to do it. So he said, we've come up with a theory. It doesn't require a vote. We're just going to launch the impeachment investigation. And you're going to use our committees to subpoena people. He didn't say harass people. That's what he means. This is what they're doing. They are not even going to force their whole Republican caucus to vote on it. So right after Labor Day, stand by, they are going to say, we're investigating Joe Biden for impeachment. Well, what does that mean? The impeachment says it has to be by a majority vote of the Congress. Well, we're not going to do that. Well, have you heard of the Constitution? We're not even going to have a majority vote of our caucus. They don't want it. This is the garbage that is going on. We're coming to the end of the show. Great, great callers as always. Stand by for another great show. Devil's Advocate with Diamond Crute. Matt Flynn Direct. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. I'm signing off for today. And I won't
back down. The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum.
So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.